Hello there. Measuring in at Shorter Than Out of Control Weeds, it's me, Michelle Cortins. You'll notice that we took a short break during the harvest season, and now we're back with the start of season number 3. On today's episode of the Orchard Outlook podcast, we're germinating a wealth of information about troublesome weeds. Perennial weeds in particular are like the unwanted gift that just keeps on giving as their underground root systems proliferate. We can practically blink and then weeds are taking over again. So let's slow down and creep into weed biology that will help with management decisions. But don't look at me, I'm not a weed biologist. But I found one of the leading weed scientists in the U.S. who agreed to be today's guest and made time in her busy schedule. Originally inspired by a pest control lecture on dandelions, our guest was motivated to research plant protection practices. She takes on understanding the life cycles of really pesky weeds. So let's stay out of the weeds, let's stay focused, and welcome our guest, Dr. Lynn Sosnowski. Hi, Lynn. Thanks so much for joining me.
Thank you for having me.
So I follow you on Twitter, and I saw that you had the handle that you're a serial weed killer, but I know recently you moved over to the good side, and you're going to live happily ever after.
Yeah, so my current name on Twitter in the spirit of Halloween is cereal as in the grain, weed killer. But I will admit my predominant focus here at Cornell University in New York is specialty crops. Vegetables, fruits, and some horticultural ornamental systems.
Awesome. So, well, let's just jump right into it then and talk about the weed spectrum in orchards, kind of like the first step to weed management here. So how does the weed spectrum inform our choice of herbicide?
Yeah, so you brought up a great point. Is the first step in weed management is knowing who you have to deal with. And not only just knowing who you have to deal with, but knowing about their biology and their ecology so you can make the most informed and most effective choices. So it's having a good foundation in weed identification, but then it's also knowing when those weeds are growing and how they're growing. So understanding what your weed spectrum looks like, whether you're dealing primarily with annual species or perennial species, because that's going to influence the herbicide choices you might engage with, or understanding if you're dealing with grasses versus broadleaf species, or whether you're dealing with spring annuals and summer annuals or fall and winter annuals and those different germination times. Because again, that's going to influence maybe what herbicides you choose, when you put those herbicides down, but it'll also influence more than just herbicides. It'll influence your choice of using maybe some other chemical or physical control practices so that you can choose a strategy that's most effective against the target species.
Yeah, so you mentioned winter annuals, and I think they're kind of counterintuitive to our thinking in the fall where weeds are shutting down in the orchard, but are these weeds then, like, is that actually their prime time? Like they're germinating at that time?
Yeah, this is when they're getting out of the ground. There are a lot of weed species that are shutting down, and maybe if you go and you try to manage them down now, you're not going to really see a lot of success because, you know, they're already, you know, giving up the ghost. They're already done. But our fall and winter species, this is when they primarily want to emerge. And for us, the number one species that I'm dealing with right now is horseweed, also called mare's tails or Canada fleabane sometimes, erigeron or Kinesia canadensis. It has a cohort that starts germinating and emerging in the fall. And so this is a species that I'm getting calls about, particularly because some of our growers are going in to manage and we have resistance, herbicide resistance to glyphosate and some other chemicals. And so, you know, we're running into some problems with our control practices.
I'm glad you mentioned the common name Canada fleabane, actually, because I didn't know which one you were talking about before. Regional differences.
That's the problem with common names, is that it changes everywhere you go, but
So some common winter annuals that we're seeing here are common groundsel, common chickweed, and bluegrass as well. So those are some of the ones that we're kind of looking into. So if we kind of switch our focus to perennial weeds now, what we see above ground can often be like the tip of an iceberg. So can you explain some weeds that are notorious for having like an extensive system below ground?
Yeah, so there's a lot of species that I get calls about, you know, that are perennials, and you know, they're monsters above ground. They get a lot of biomass above ground, but their root systems are really what allows them to persist over time. So I do have a lot of growers here who goldenrods, solidago species. You know, they're having problems managing solidago in some of their orchards. You know, it does have, again, this extensive root system that facilitates its survival, or Canada thistle. But probably, you know, a weed species that I love and that my growers are dealing with that has truly one of the most amazing and most extensive root systems is field bindweed, Combobulus arvensis. The majority of its roots are found in the top 1 to 3 feet of soil, but this species is reported to have tap roots that can go, you know, 10, 20, up to 30 feet deep, depending on the system, that just allows it to take advantage of, you know, water that is very low in the soil surface. And this is particularly a problem in California, where I was before I came to New York, you know, in the Central Valley, which is exceptionally dry and is very dependent on either surface water allocations or deeper water reserves, that this weed was just able to thrive when we hadn't seen water in 30, 60, 90, 100 days because of that root system being able to get into that water.
That's incredible. Definitely have a lot of respect for
weeds like that. Sounds like you do too.
Oh, absolutely. They're one step ahead of weed scientists for sure. They're just marvelous adaptive creatures, and yeah, I respect them. Yeah. I'm trying to kill them, but I respect them.
Yes, yeah. Yeah, so we don't actually have a lot of bindweed here in Nova Scotia from what I've seen, from what I've been able to kind of look into. So people listening to this might be jealous in other regions, but I've definitely seen where it can wreak havoc in Ontario, especially. Yeah, so really glad we don't have to deal with that, and hopefully we don't in the near future.
I hope so too. It's a monster.
Yes. So is there like a common approach to managing perennial weeds in orchards?
So this is actually where I'm going to say no, because it is very much going to depend on the perennial weed that you're dealing with. And not all perennials are going to be sensitive to all control measures at the same time. So I think, you know, sometimes there's this tendency to default and say, okay, you know, we should be doing fall applications for perennial weed management. And by and large, that may be true, mostly, but it's important to understand is that the sensitivity of these perennial weeds to management strategies can vary throughout the season. It can vary species to species, and it can vary even within a species throughout the growing season. So for instance, a weed like Canada thistle, we recommend targeting it in the spring before it starts to flower. And then if you miss that spring application, you know, we recommend then, you know, fall applications to, you know, target the new rosettes. you know, something like field bindweed, if you go too early in the spring and, you know, the vines aren't really out of the ground yet and they're just starting to emerge. So going in and trying to spray them at that time might not be really effective because you don't have a lot of biomass out of the ground to intercept that herbicide. And you also have the nutrients, you know, moving from the roots up to, you know, the bindweed leaves. So if you're looking to use a systemic herbicide like glyphosate, it's not moving, you know, it moves in the phloem. So it's going to be following the phloem, which is going up towards the new growth and not to the roots, which you want to target. That being said, you can target field bindweed in the fall, but if you're going too late in the fall and the plant doesn't have a lot of vigor, you're not going to be really effective. There was work that was done in the 1970s and 80s that found bindweed was most vigorous and it had the best translocation of glyphosate when it was flowering in the summer. But that might be a problem with some production systems if, you know, it's a time that's not favorable with respect to the phenology of the crop. So therein comes some of our problem is that when the weed might be most responsive, that might be a bad time with respect to the crop's development for targeting it with certain products. So I don't want to say there's a common approach because the common approach or the approach is going to vary between weeds. It's going to differ based on the time of year, even within a weed. And it might be that you can't actually do something that's ideal because you've got to think about crop safety. So I know people want to hear do this, but my answer is, I'm sorry, it depends.
Okay. Yeah. And so you mentioned for some weeds when they're flowering is when they're vigorous. So that could be a target timing. So I know, I think it's vetch when it's flowering that could, I remember reading on a herbicide label that could be a target timing. So that would kind of be the reason why when it's flowering, it's vigorous and.
Yeah. A lot of it can deal with, you know, again, it seems counterintuitive, you know, like you're thinking, well, gosh, if a weed is stressed, you know, it's already suffering. Maybe I go in and put a herbicide down then, but no, weeds that are suffering or aren't very vigorous, aren't actively moving the herbicide or maybe the physiological and the biochemical processes that the herbicide is going to target, you know, aren't as active. So, you know, that's not a good time to be making an application. So yeah, there's a lot of information out there. And again, all of these species are different and the timing may also differ based on where you are. Nova Scotia may have very, you know, different phenology than New York does. So, but there's a lot of information out there with respect to these individual species and their biology and phenology and ecology that can help making management decisions.
Okay, awesome. And so if there is a perennial weed and, you know, you're kind of forced into using post-emergence products, is the idea with that you kind of keep hitting it and depleting the reserves in that perennial system?
Yeah, so really what it comes down for managing perennial weeds, whether it's deplete the reserves, okay? So whether you're using like a systemic product that maybe might do some damage to the root system, or even if you're using a contact product that, you know, will just burn the tops off, or even if you're using something like mowing, or some sort of physical removal, what you want to do is force that plant to use some reserves to push out that new growth. So, you know, exhaust some of that energy that it's got stored, but don't let it put energy back into the system. So you want to exhaust energy to remove that top growth or cause the damage, force it to use energy, remove the top growth, force it to use energy, you know, cause damage, and try to deplete those reserves. Being very infrequent with management, with perennials, is a good way to not get the job done. And I would say in like our annual systems, I had a grower who would go in and cultivate his bindweed field, but he'd only cultivate it once. So what started off as a 1 acre patch of bindweed became a 10 acre
field.
You know, or 1 acre patch, a 1 acre field became 10 acres because all he did was now move the fragments around, and those fragments could regenerate, regrow, reestablish their root system. So consistency is the key.
Okay.
Little bindweed in Kansas, they found they had to go in and they had to cultivate. This was in the 40s and 50s. They had to cultivate every 2 to 3 weeks for 2-3 seasons to exhaust the reserves that plant had stored.
Okay. So what about using residual herbicides for perennial weeds if they're forming seeds and contributing to the seedbed?
So residual herbicides can be effective against the seedling phase of perennial weeds. You know, absolutely. If you do have a species that is reliant on seed production, think dandelions, you know, a taproot that persists, but the seed being responsible for its spread over space and time. Even field bindweed, we focus on like the rhizomes, but field bindweed does produce seed, and those seed persist in the soil, and they can be controlled by our residual herbicides, those emerging seedlings. Now, there are some residual herbicides, and it can be very dependent on species, that may have some activity against the perennial plants themselves. I've done some work looking at residual herbicides and field bindweed and its effect on the perennial structures. But I would say don't rely on those if you have very heavy perennial weed population as being your most effective tool.
Okay. And what would be some of the barriers to using a residual herbicide in our orchards?
Okay, there's a lot of barriers for choosing a residual herbicide. Part of it is going to be the crop that you're growing. Not all residual herbicides are going to be registered for all crops. So something may be registered in apples, but not pears. So both palm fruits, but not the same. Or you may have something registered in palm fruits, but not stone fruits. You may have certain products that may have differential sensitivity on different rootstocks. So not all rootstocks may be equally sensitive. So a full dwarf rootstock, you know, something may not be appropriate for use in a full dwarf rootstock. Your soil type can influence your choice of a product, whether you have very sandy soils, and there might be some herbicides that are going to be very prone to leaching and you don't want to use that. Your tree age, a lot of products, you know, have minimum age requirements. So if you've got a new orchard versus an older orchard, the products you're going to have available are going to be very, very different. And then again, of course, the weed spectrum that you have to deal with. You may have a great residual herbicide, but if it doesn't have your target weeds on it, you know, that's a waste of money. That's a waste of product to put it out.
Yeah, for sure. So I think you've been doing some work on herbicide resistant weeds. Is that right?
Yes. Herbicide resistant weeds are common across our production systems here in New York. And I am actively working to identify the resistance that we have in the state and describe the distribution of our resistant biotypes.
Okay. So when might a grower like start to suspect herbicide resistance in their orchards?
Yeah. So in your orchards or any system that you might be involved in, you've got to ask yourself some questions. Ask yourself, did you put the right product out at the right time against the right species, right? Did you make an appropriate selection? And did you make sure that you were doing everything by the label? Did you check your sprayer? Make sure that your sprayer was functioning well, that it was calibrated properly, that your nozzles weren't clogged, you know, that you put out what you believed you were putting out. You know, were the environmental conditions right at the time that you made the application? If you put out a residual herbicide, did you get the activation you needed through irrigation or a rainfall event? If you put out a post-emergence herbicide, did you not get a rainfall, right? Did you don't want rain that could potentially wash the products off before they're rain fast. So were your environmental conditions appropriate? So if you're asking yourself that, you know, I had the right mix, I made sure my water quality was appropriate, I made sure, you know, my applications, you know, were put out properly. If you can't attribute something to you and maybe what you've done, then start asking some other questions. Is this a weed that you always used to be able to control with a herbicide? And now you can't, you know? So is there a distinct change in state from control to no control? Are you seeing dead plants intermixed with live plants of the same species? Are you seeing dead plants of you know, a whole suite of other species intermixed with live plants of a species that you used to be able to kill with this product? Are you seeing a patch or patches or a problem that's growing over time in space? And you're like, well, okay, it was just here, but now it's here, here, and here. And now it's here, 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 and here. So if you can answer those last questions with yes, well, then maybe we need to start thinking about the possibility of herbicide resistance being an issue and contacting, you know, your extension and university personnel to help you, you know, determine this formally. You know, we talk about resistance with annual species, but it is also possible that we can shift our perennial species as well. It's less well studied, but using the same herbicide over time and space is that we can see changes in how our perennial weeds respond too, and that, you know, they get a little more tolerant. They can get a little bit more tolerant over time. We're working with a perennial sow thistle right now that doesn't seem to be responding to a herbicide like it used to 5-10 years back, you know, according to the extension personnel and the growers. And yeah, you know, comparing it to some other populations, it looks like there's been a shift in its response.
Okay, good to know. And those are great questions. So thanks for sharing those. I'll definitely keep those in mind and hope growers will too. So some weed control practices, like I hear, might be shifting towards more precision. So have you heard much about like automated weed control for horticulture crops? Like is there any talk about spot spraying weeds?
Yeah, I'm actually engaged in a project to look at a vision guided sprayer for use in tree and vine systems right now.
Perfect.
Yeah, so there's a lot of interest in, can we reduce kind of our chemical footprint in our different production environments by just using our post-emergence herbicides against the weeds themselves?
Yeah.
And not putting out banded applications over that entire strip, you know, so that maybe some of it's coming into contact with soil where it's not having any activity. So, you know, so we are actually, we have a vision guided system that is been widely used out in the Western US and dry land wheat production areas in their fallow years for weed control. And it's being looked at in California in some orchard environments. And we're doing that here in New York. I have a colleague who's also doing it in berries in New Jersey to see if this precision vision guided sprayer can be used on the East Coast to target some of our predominant weed species. Again, with the idea that we would reduce our, you know, chemical footprint while maintaining weed control, but also maybe while reducing the potential for injury to the crops themselves by using our chemicals more judiciously. And also, you know, there's always that possibility if we can maintain weed control and we could improve crop safety, you know, is there a potential that we could get other products registered if we change the use pattern in our orchard environments? That's obviously way down the road, but you know, it's something to think about. That being said, I'm also engaged in some other projects to look at some other strategies. We just got a grant to look at an electrical weeder that would be used in orchard, vine, and berry systems that wouldn't have any chemical component. And that should have some theoretical activity against our perennial weed species as well. And we're going to be starting that in 2022, in addition to our vision sprayer work, looking at this electrical system that's designed specifically for orchard environments.
Interesting. Cool. And that's not a Halloween joke?
That is not a Halloween joke. The USDA organic OREI funded our project to look to bring new technology, you know, evaluate new technology in our orchard systems.
Very cool. Well, it's good to hear about those new precision technologies that you're working on. So I want to say thank you so much for joining us on the podcast today. Is there anywhere that people can follow you to find out more information?
Yeah, so I am on Twitter. You can follow me. It's at Lynn Sosnowski, my name. I'm on Instagram. I'm also at Cornell University. So if you'd like to reach out, you can email me there. And you know, I have a lot of colleagues in Canada, and I hope to after COVID, you know, be able to actually do a lot of active work with my Canadian colleagues, because I think, you know, combined, we can bring a lot of value to our, you know, our industries here on the East Coast.
Yeah, that sounds great. So I'll put a link to all those resources in the description. And I also want to mention to folks that you were on the War Against Weeds podcast too. So if they're interested in hearing more, I'll also put a link to that episode.
Oh, thank you.
Great. Well, thank you.
Thank you so much. I really enjoyed it.
Follow me on Twitter at NSTrueFruit and follow Perennia on Facebook and Twitter at NSPerennia. Thanks to Perennia for creeping like perennial weeds into podcasting. Thank you to Patty Ryan and Moira Anderson for their communications support. And thank you to growers for asking about those troublesome weeds. Here's a fun fact. I've eaten fresh dandelion pasta and chickweed summer salad. Not from an orchard floor, mind you, but weeds for dinner nonetheless. This gives true meaning to the phrase, eat your problems away.